Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. We Mentor Inc., along with donations and sponsors from leaders like you, fund this program. We Mentor Inc. is an innovative mentoring community I founded in 1992, where small business owners co-create a leadership foundation of mutual human advancement and profitability to reach a level of leadership expertise they have never experienced before. My vision is to revolutionize entrepreneurial leadership and business ownership from the inside out and upside down. There isn't a topic we don't discuss. We focus on bringing out more of who you are and facilitate where you envision yourself to be next as you sustain profitability and growth. You will learn strategies, techniques, and skills to strengthen your leadership and become a more effective innovator. This way you can capitalize on and participate more fully in our evolving world. You will reinvent yourself as you redesign your business. In the end, you will end up loving your life and loving how you lead and innovate in all its messiness. Here's some questions to ponder if a lab, a We Mentor Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab, is a right fit for you. Do you need new skills and strategies to grow your business? Do you want to participate more fully in this economy? Are you snuffing out creativity and opportunities for innovation because of how you are leading? Is your business running you? Are you tired of your business? Is there a disconnect between you and those you employ? Are you recovering from a major setback and need more skills to recover and rise from the experience with greater clarity, resilience, and a new perspective? Do you want to increase your business acumen and bump up your emotional intelligence while you generate more income? Are you ready to have fun and make money with how you are leading and mentoring others? Well, you can get started. We've got a new lab that's coming up. Just give me a call at 612-804-8920. Let's talk. All right. So we've got Sazula Bedone in the studio today.
Yay! Hello.
Hello. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm great. Glad to be here.
Good. You and I met through my husband, Matthew Foley. And, well, I've heard of you through Matthew. And said, he said, well, you've got to meet Sazula. So you and I met officially at a Minnesota Continuing Legal Education Conference on Health and Resilience for Lawyers on January 10th, 2018. You and I were presenters. You co-presented with Elizabeth Wittenberg?
Yep.
Okay. The title of your presentation was Breaking Stigma, Creating Awareness, Safety, and Understanding for Seeking Help. And I think we'll go through a few tips later on.
Okay.
Yeah, because we have more important things to talk about first.
Yes.
We have to set this up right.
Yes.
And some of what you presented, like I said, we'll talk about later. Real estate attorney Matthew Foley and I co-presented in a breakout session on empathic listening for important conversations. Many of you know Matthew, and you heard just recently now that he is my husband, and he introduces me to so many fantastic people, and you're one of them.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Sazula did not become an advocate, attorney, and yoga teacher as a result of a well-planned career choice in her youth. She came about her career and purpose in life through discovering what doesn't work in the criminal justice system and what didn't work in her life. Sazula Bedone is a recovery advocate, attorney, yoga teacher, and Minnesota certified peer recovery specialist. She developed her recovery yoga meetings curriculum as a facet of her own recovery and has been leading recovery yoga meetings since 2012. She has a resiliency, tenacity, and a desire to grow herself as she creates change for others. Thank you for mustering up the courage to share your life experiences, where you've been, where you are at, and where you're going.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, let's go. Let's get digging into it.
All right. What do you want to know?
All right. Well, first describe a little bit. Well, how are you feeling right now?
How am I feeling right now? Well,
according to your self-awareness mentoring journal.
According to my self-awareness mentoring journal, aware, curious, connected, mentally fluid and clear, trust higher power, receptive, grounded, and optimistic.
Ah, very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you're in a really good place for this.
Yes, yes. I've been looking forward to it. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, and I'm feeling grounded, optimistic, happy, kind, very action-oriented today, and also challenged. I'm learning some how to use a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of little details to know about that. So I'm kind of taking it in steps so that I don't get overwhelmed, you know, too quickly all the time. I just say, I'm going to spend an hour on this today and figure this piece out of
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So I'm a work in progress. So where'd you grow up?
Where did I grow up? Well, I was born in Spooner, Wisconsin, and Northwest Wisconsin, and was raised there. Then moved to the Twin Cities in high school and went to St. Paul Academy. Hmm. And so I was raised in the woods and then came down here to the cities in high school.
Okay, that must have been a big transition.
Yes, it was a huge transition, but one that I wanted very badly. I was very much a city person, born in the woods, so I was not happy as a child. I didn't like where we were living. Of course, now in hindsight, I can appreciate all of it. At the time, it just felt really isolated and alone.
Sure. So, mm-hmm. So how did you occupy your time? What were some of the things you enjoyed doing as a child?
A lot of reading.
Okay.
We did live in a beautiful place. We lived on a river, the Yellow River.
Mm.
So I spent a lot of time catching tadpoles and frogs and swimming and all the things you do in the woods.
Did you have any siblings?
I did. I had a younger brother, John.
Okay.
5 years younger.
Mm-hmm. And he's still here with you?
He's not. He actually died of an overdose at the age of 37 in June of this past year.
Yeah.
Yes, he's one of the many reasons that I do the work I do on transforming policy for substance use disorder. So,
Yeah.
So, I mean, we know from the Surgeon General's report and most of the science that we have now that addiction or substance use disorder is 40 to 70% genetic. And then, of course, trauma plays a role and, you know, nurture as well as nature. So, you know, my father drank a lot. He, you know, didn't ever do anything horrible. He kept a job. He loved us, but he abused alcohol. And so my brother and I also went down that path.
Mm. Are your parents still alive?
My father died when I was 16 of a heart attack. My mother is still alive. Yep.
Hmm. Lots of trauma for you too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So your mom moved. So you moved down to St. Paul. So if your dad passed away when you were 16.
Right before he passed away. So we moved right before my junior year of high school.
Okay.
And so he passed a few months after we moved here in February.
So you were not only acclimating to like a new school and a new community and meeting all new friends and letting go of your other friends your life there in Spooner.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden your dad passes away.
Yeah, it was a tremendous shock and, you know, a pivotal moment in my life, a traumatic moment that, you know, kind of if I'd had any discipline or any restraint in my life, it was due in large part to my father. And so when he passed, the grief as well as that discipline and restraint was gone. And so, you know, I set off for the races in terms of my own pursuit of addiction at that point.
Okay. And so you started experimenting or?
Yeah, I did what I think most kids, at least in my experience, do, which is, you know, cigarettes, alcohol, the gateway drugs. And did those in middle school and high school and then started using marijuana in high school.
Okay.
So.
Did any of them help soothe the pain?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I personally am very comfortable sharing my past because it's part of my purpose. I share my full experience. You know, nothing held back because I want to help other people. And so part of my story is that I also have depression. And so one of the main reasons that I started to use drugs was because I was trying to self-medicate my depression and then my grief. I just wanted a way to feel differently because I couldn't stand the way I felt.
And where do you think the depression came from? I mean, was this before your dad passed away? Did you feel depressed?
Yeah, in my understanding is, you know, it's a neurobiological, there's a chemical imbalance. At least that's what I believe.
Because you're clinically depressed.
Yes.
So you went in and got diagnosed.
Yes.
And so there's a special treatment once you go through a diagnosis like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what age were you when you went through and became diagnosed?
You know, I don't recall exactly. I think I was 15 or 16.
Wow, that's really early.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So your mother, did she say, you know, I think you should see somebody about this? Or what was she seeing?
It was not a secret in my family that I was unhappy.
She was kind of your cheerleader in moving down to St. Paul?
Yes, she was also, we both felt isolated in Northwest Wisconsin, my mom and I.
She too, okay.
Yep.
And she's still alive?
Yes, she is.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow, so I can't imagine how challenging that would have been.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And your brother was younger than you by how many years, five?
5 years, yep.
Okay, so if you were 16, he was 11.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. And how did he take the move? Was he excited about the move too?
No, he was excited, but he was very happy in Wisconsin.
Okay.
He and my father were kind of in the same two peas in a pod. They loved to hunt and fish and do all the things up there. Whereas my mother and I were looking for more social activity and more culture, more of a city environment. So, but he also, you know, he knew that there'd be increased opportunities, and so he was also looking forward to it. But it was very difficult for both of us, and then all the more so when our father died, especially for my brother. It was horrible for me, and I can't even imagine at the age of 11 losing your father.
So. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
So tell us more about how your life, for a while then, it was not so great.
Understatement, yes.
Okay.
So I was in high school. My father died. I was depressed, and I made a decision that I was going to go to New York City to go to college, not because of any particular school, but I just wanted to get the hell out of the Midwest and wanted to have access to all the excitement and drugs and things that I saw in the Hollywood movies that looked good to me after this life of living at such a low energy level with depression in Wisconsin. So that's what I did. I went out to school in New York City and found exactly what I was looking for. Tried everything, eventually became addicted to heroin, and spent many years struggling with heroin addiction. Ultimately got on methadone and went, so I took time off of school to confront my addiction. Got on methadone and then ultimately went back to school, Barnard College in New York, and graduated on methadone.
College.
Yes, it was an amazing experience.
It's amazing that you could keep your grades up and graduate during this time.
Well, yeah. So when I, you know, my first 2.5 years of college, I was in the throes of addiction. And then I took 2 years off to deal with my addiction. I got on methadone. And then the last 2 years of school, I was on methadone. And so...
And methadone is a way, a drug that's used to help you get off?
So methadone is, it's something that's called medication-assisted therapy or medication-assisted treatment. And it's proving in all the studies most of the studies being done now that I know of, to be really effective in treating opioid use disorder. As everyone knows, we have a crisis in this country. And I can speak from my personal experience, which is that I was addicted to heroin. And if abstinence had been an option, if I could have just stopped and proceeded with my recovery, I would have done that. I tried that. And it was only having methadone, which essentially what it did for me and what it does is it fills that physiological need for a substance, for an opioid in the brain to deal with the withdrawal, to deal with the pain that initially sent me towards addiction.
Sure.
While not I didn't have to break the law to get methadone, and it kept me on an even keel so that I could get my life back together. So while on methadone, I was able to get my life back together, go back to college, graduate from college, and then eventually get off methadone.
And gradually get off methadone because your brain somehow repairs? How does that work?
Well, I—
How did it work for you?
I'm not a doctor, right. You know, there are so many variables. What I can say for me with regard to medication-assisted therapy is that the pain that I was running from that drove me to use heroin and other drugs to self-medicate, that didn't go away when I stopped using heroin or other drugs. That came back with a vengeance.
Sure.
And what I needed, or what worked for me, was methadone, which dealt with that pain, that psychological pain, so that I could build a life that was worth living, that I wanted to live, so that eventually when I got off of that medication, I was able to maintain that.
I see. Not an easy journey.
No, definitely not.
All right. So you were able to get on methadone and stay on there for a while and, like you said, kind of reclaim your life.
Yes.
And graduate with a degree in what?
Theater.
Theater.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so did you stay in New York after you graduated?
Yes. I stayed in New York City. I worked as a bartender and at Whole Foods Market and tried to get by, but very quickly learned that it's very different to live in New York City when you're a student versus when you're an adult without that support system and that community of, you know, cheap living and the community that you get that comes with any college experience.
Yeah, right. Lots of friends and a whole system of places to go and people to connect with.
Yes.
And so you left. So when you graduated, you were trying to build a new life without all the resources that you had kind of acclimated and that helped you at college.
Well, yes. And also, I still had unresolved grief. And, you know, while the methadone had helped me to maintain my recovery and graduate from college, I still had untreated depression. And so ultimately, I went back to using drugs. But this time, I went the other direction. I used uppers or stimulants, cocaine and methamphetamine.
Okay. And what was the difference for you with those?
Well, there was no difference in that my drug use always was due to me needing and wanting a way to feel differently. It didn't matter what drug it was. It could be shopping. It could be—
Oh, because you wanted to get away from, as far away from your pain as possible.
Right. I wanted something to numb or medicate the pain. Okay. And so for me, I had learned my lesson with opiates, and I didn't want to go that route again.
Oh, okay.
And so—
So you were done with opiates, and this was another option.
Right. Well, this is what I went to because I, again, was in that place of just needing to feel better regardless of the consequences.
When you were taking the methadone, were you working with is it prescribed?
Yes.
Okay. So you were working with a doctor. Were they helping give you the skills to kind of help cope with your pain?
Yes. I was in therapy and had a, you know, counselor and all those things at the time. Yes.
Okay. And so that is it when that all ended, when you went back?
No, it was more I graduated from college and I had been in a long-term relationship with someone and we broke up. And so that was a big trigger for me, kind of a reopening of that traumatic wound of losing someone very close to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, in circles of people who have experience with substance use disorder, I would say I just wasn't done. There was some part of me that hadn't hit bottom. There was some part of me that was still aching and hurting and was unable to understand that drugs were not the way to deal with that because I was desperate to deal with it.
And so once you started with the methamphetamine and cocaine, what happened?
I maintained on those drugs, using them, working as a bartender in New York City. And then one day I got attacked on the street, just a random attack. I was very lucky. I didn't get seriously injured, but it was enough to scare me. So I called my mother back here in Minnesota and said, you know, I'm coming back to Minnesota. I'm getting out of the city. I need to, you know, try and figure out my life. So I did that. That was 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. And I came back here and I gave it my all for 5 months. I, you know, saw a psychiatrist, was on my antidepressant, went to meetings, 12-step meetings, did all the things that you're supposed to do in a 12-step meeting, sponsorship, yeah, et cetera.
Okay.
And I still wasn't done. I still couldn't bear living, being in my own skin. And so I relapsed here after 5 months of sobriety. And that's when I started down the final darkness of the path that has led me to where I am today.
All right. We're going to stop here.
Okay.
And we're going to continue with the path.
Okay.
That went further down, but then you came way up.
Yes.
So, yeah, once you go down a certain path and you hit the bottom,
yes,
you found your way up in a really remarkable way. And what you're doing with your life is really incredible.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing this part.
Yes, indeed.
You ready to share the rest?
I'm ready. Yes.
Okay. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. And we'll continue Suzula's journey next week.
Thank you, Nancy. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, brother from another mother, photographer and videographer. Mm-hmm.